Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing the future of food and nutrition in the context of a rising global population and the need for nutrition from sustainable sources. My special guest is Professor Johannes Lecoutre, a Professor of Food and Health at the University of New South Wales, Sydney's School of Chemical Engineering. Professor Lecoutre, Johannes, thank you so much for joining me today.
Sam, thanks for having me. My pleasure. Looking forward to the podcast.
Johannes, let me start by asking you, from a food and health perspective, what are those key challenges the world is expected to face in the years to come?
What the world is going to face will be just an ongoing increase in demographics. So our population clearly is going to grow by about 2 billion people over the next 30 years. That means we're going to be at about 9.5 to 10 billion people by 2050. And what that brings is just a clear necessity and need to ramp up our food production, because those people will all want to eat, and they want to eat good and nutritious and safe food, which in other words means that we will have to ramp up our food production by about 70%.
But Johannes, if we're having to ramp up our food production by as much as 70%, how do we do that without overwhelming the planet?
What needs to be done in the broadest sense is we need to rethink and innovate our current food system. And a food system, just to maybe define that term, really includes it all, from the agricultural production of our biomaterials, if you will, throughout livestock, food processing, retail, delivery, consumers, consumption, and at the end, even sort of disposal and possibly and hopefully not actually food waste. So that's a food system. Different geographies typically feature and have different food systems. And the challenge will now be to make these food systems fit for those years to come, for an increase in demographics, for an increase in population, and to innovate and to improve, and to again also straighten out already existing issues.
And Professor Lecoutre, the demand for meat alone is going to be enormous. Now, there are developments in lab-grown meat and no-kill meat. What can you tell me, firstly, about no-kill meat and how it might be able to help the situation?
The idea and the concept behind lab-grown meat actually goes back to an idea of Winston Churchill in the 1930s, who already talked about the absurdity of growing an animal if you just want to eat actually certain parts of it, an animal with horns and beak and skin. So that is when the concept has been planted as a real futuristic concept back in the day. Now, about 10, 15 years ago, people started, or a bit earlier even, in the Netherlands, in laboratories to really try to make this happen. And what needs to be done and what is being done in order to grow meat in a laboratory, you take a little biopsy from an animal, from a live animal, by all means, and that animal will stay alive and will be happy. You take a little biopsy and you grow that in the laboratory, first in a petri dish, later in flasks, and then in smaller bioreactors, all the way until you can go to bigger vats and bioreactors to amounts that will then become edible, and you grow that material while feeding it with media that are, of course, animal free as well on the one hand, but hopefully also affordable, safe, and capable of providing all of the nutrients that are required to build a piece of meat in the laboratory. That is in a nutshell, the cornerstones for this technology. And by now there is worldwide growing interest and growing activities in this field, both in the emerging startup, entrepreneurial, commercial sector, as well as in academic environments. In fact, academic environments are lagging behind a little bit. We are trying to address this to provide the field with research. But again, in a nutshell, that's what cell-based and cultured meat is about. And only the future will tell if that approach and if that concept really will fly or if it will remain a gimmick.
Yes, certainly time will tell. But what do you think the tipping point will be when lab-grown meat becomes more available and more affordable than actual meat?
The tipping point is clearly dependent upon consumer confidence and upon consumer trust into these materials and into also consumer preference. So it is all about the consumers who will not only put their money out to buy these materials, but also to eat it. So there is a lot of hurdles that need to be taken in order to achieve this tipping or inflection point. At the same time, and this is ongoing already, we need to look at the true cost of things. And that is something which started, as far as I know, with water, but clearly is happening also with animal-derived meats. So the true cost of many things often is much higher than what we are currently paying in supermarkets for many different reasons. The hope will be that cell-based or cultured or cultivated meat eventually will be able to reach and beat those costs while, again, maintaining a very high qualitative level.
My special guest today is Professor Johannes Lecoutre, a professor of food and health at the University of New South Wales, Sydney's School of Chemical Engineering. And we're discussing the future of food and health. Professor Lecoutre, consumers surely can't ensure the future of food security themselves. What role then must governments play in ensuring the food security of their populations?
We all, one way or another, want this sort of game change to happen. We want safe, secure, and delicious food into the future for us and for our kids, affordable food. And you have the regulatory bodies on top of this, and everybody is trying to contribute, right? Again, the financial industry is trying to get out with a profit, and that is their role. The academic world is trying to make sure it all somehow makes sense and is logical. Consumers, again, want good and healthy food, and the regulators want safe food. Governments want safe food. And that's the sort of multi-dimensional equation we're looking at. And at the same time, Rome has not built in one day. So you will not be able to push innovation. And if you push it too much, you're losing credibility.
And Professor Lecoutre, in an Australian context, is Australia doing enough to ensure its food security into the future?
Well, first of all, food security is the opposite of food insecurity. And food insecurity is, if you will, the beginning of hunger. And so food security is the opposite of hunger. Australia is a wealthy country. Australia is definitely a beautiful and amazing country, but also sort of blessed with a lot of agriculture and with a broad and massive and exporting agricultural sector. So we have it all in place, and yet food security is linked nowadays first of all, to global commodity markets. We will see and are seeing probably already that the war in Ukraine does have an impact on commodity prices, even in Australia, number one. Number two, we will be or are exposed constantly to climate change phenomena and problems and issues. We will be facing these problems all the time when there are floods and or fires, that our food security is at risk.
And Professor Lecoutre, I'd like to ask you about countries that are more dependent on food imports, like, for example, the United Kingdom. Are countries like that more at risk of food insecurity?
Yes, yes. I mean, and actually the UK is a really good example. You see what Brexit did to UK food supplies, and I am quite sort of involved with this because our son lives in London, and so I do read the news. I look what's happening, and what you see in the news. Because of Brexit, there are barriers to the import of short-lived small green leaf salads, these types of things, just get into the country. And yes, that is a clear problem, absolutely.
And lastly, I'd like to ask you about genetically modified food. As a professor of food and health, would you say genetically modified food is of greater benefit than it is of a risk?
GMO, for a number of reasons, got a really bad press in Europe, has much more followers in the US. And I always have a feeling in Australia, people are not fully aware at all about the sort of GMO situation or legislation or regulation. And again, It is my belief that GMO foods in the past mainly have been developed and put forward with a view to bring benefits to the industry or to farmers, so to the producers, without bringing too much, if any, benefits to consumers. So consumers actually do not clearly see the benefit of GMO. So without a benefit to consumers, I think it's absolutely understandable and clear and evident that the overall concept has a hard time.
Professor Johannes Lecoutre, thank you so much for joining me today.
Sam, that was my pleasure. All good. Thank you very much.
My special guest has been Professor Johannes Lecoutre, a professor of food and health at the University of New South Wales, Sydney's School of Chemical Engineering. You can find more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.